Hello, everybody. Welcome to Escaping Addictions. We have a very special show for you today with one of Nashville's great musicians, Jeremy L. And before we get started, I just want to let you know that we had to change locations because of that bad, bad tornado that came through and did all of that devastation. So we had to record the podcast in Jeremy's car. So if you hear some noise in the background, particularly sirens, that is what that is. Don't think that the police are behind you or whatever. But anyway, we're going to get right into it, and we're going to go into the interview with one of Nashville's biggest stars, Jeremy L. Down here, so
I wouldn't go that far. I'm D-level celebrity.
Well, I mean, you've got way more music fans than I ever had, so.
Are you a musician as well?
I used to mess around a little bit with rap.
All right.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Never got it.
Who are some of your favorite artists or favorite rappers or groups?
I like Tupac, Run DMC, LL
yes.
Cool J.
That's cool.
Yeah. You know, Houdini. A lot of these new guys, you
know
that? They're all right,
but if I usually don't run with headphones anymore, but when I first started running, I started running after I sobered up, but I would listen to hip hop when I ran a lot. And I've always liked Outkast and like some of the Southern roots, you know.
Oh yeah,
hip hop a lot too.
Outkast is good, yeah.
They're
good.
Really
Eminem
too.
And stuff like that. So Jeremy, tell me a little bit about you. As far as are you from Nashville? Are you a Tennessean or are you?
You know, I feel like I'm from Tennessee because I've been here for 17 years now.
17.
Yeah. But I grew up in Mississippi.
What part of Mississippi? That's where I grew up.
Yeah, we talked about that because you were in Jackson.
Jackson.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I grew up in Madison.
You did. You told me that.
I lived in Jackson and Clinton and Flowood and Madison, but I grew up mainly in Madison, kind of out in the country. And but then I moved here in 2003, and hit the ground running with music, and I was gonna just stop here for a while and move to New York because I didn't do country music at all.
Yeah.
But it seemed to work out pretty well. 17 years later, I definitely have not hit the big time, but I'm able to provide an income for me and mine, making music, which is great. And I've done a lot of things, from bartending and all kinds of weird little work along the way. Got a hot sauce business now with my brother as well.
Wow.
It's kind of cool. But
doing all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So that what brought you to Nashville is the music?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was going to be like a stepping stone before I went to New York. But so I was just going to be here for 6 months, but 17 years later, still here.
Still here.
Love it, yeah.
Sure, Nashville is grateful for that. So when did you start with the music? Were you a young kid?
Oh, yeah.
My
family, they're all singers. My mom plays piano, my dad plays guitar, and my mom's dad was in a really famous group in the 50s and 60s out of Memphis. They were a gospel group called the Blackwood Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They sang with Elvis, and Elvis wanted to be in the Blackwood Brothers, and then he decided on a solo career. I think it was a good move.
Yeah, he did. He did all right for himself. Yeah.
But the Blackwood Brothers, they were Elvis's mom's favorite group, and they actually sang at her funeral. But so that whole side, my mom's side is just, they're full of singers and old gospel stuff. And then my dad and mom met in college in Clinton, Mississippi, at Mississippi College.
Oh,
and they were both music students, and just ran in the family. So like as soon as me and my brothers were born, like before we were talking, we were singing. They were having us match pitches, like my dad would go, loo, 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 and we would sing back to him. Loo, loo, loo. So they were teaching us to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom always did harmonies in church. She sang the alto line, and so I would just listen to her. And then by the time I got to choir, I would never even sing with a melody. I was just making up harmonies around it.
Yeah.
And they were like, "How are you doing that?" I was like, "I'm just doing what my mom does." So, so it just kind of came naturally.
That's cool. I get, so you have a lot to owe to your mother for your singing.
Most definitely. Yeah. Mom and dad both. Yeah. They instilled a lot of music, and you know, great morals and a good upbringing for me. Yeah, good folks. I lucked out.
Yeah. Well, I feel the same way. My mom, you know, brought me up good and in the church. And so now we're going to get to the other part.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The other side. So I remember exactly where I was the first time that I got wasted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember the day. It was my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So
how old were you?
I was 21. It was my 21st birthday.
21? You waited a little while.
I did.
You waited the legal age, you know?
I was going out with some friends at work, and they were taking me out because it was my 21st birthday. I was in New Orleans at that time.
Yep.
And, you know, you gotta get drunk on your 21st birthday.
Yeah, it's like a rite of passage.
Rite of passage, yeah. So,
especially in New Orleans.
Oh, my. Yeah. New Orleans parties all day.
Yes.
When indeed. I left New Orleans and, you know, we would go out to buy some beer or something, and it was Sunday, and they said, oh, well, we don't sell beer on Sunday. I was like, huh?
In New Orleans, they did?
No, this was in Texas.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, New Orleans, yeah.
Yeah, New Orleans is all the time. That's why it shocked me. So where were you when you first?
It wasn't my first drink, but the first time I set out to get drunk, I was in high school. I was probably 13 or 14, it was a sophomore in high school. And we drank Beefeater's gin and Gatorade. Great, great combination. But I loved it. You know, it was like the first time I did it. It was me and two friends and got blackout drunk the very first time I drank and loved
me too.
It. Yeah. Just like, I was like, we were just went out in the yard.
You were high school. How old were you?
I was probably 14. So I was 14, a sophomore. Yeah. So yeah. I graduated when I was 17, so yeah, I was a little bit younger in my class.
Mm-hmm.
But we did it up and it was fun. I woke up the next morning and I was like, "What did we do?" Like I'd lost track of, you know, 30 minutes or an hour or so, and passed out somewhere. And then we all just laughed it off and like, "That was amazing."
Yeah.
So it I had to be a little bit more secretive about it, but I would, you know, whenever the occasion arose, like if I were to stay at other friends or whatever, you know, I would make sure to party hard and I had a good time. You know, the things I liked about it was it got rid of my anxiety. I felt like I could talk to anyone. I wanted to be a performer and a musician, so it kind of helped me get the courage just to do whatever I wanted in front of people. And it seemed to me that people enjoyed being around me when I was drinking. So I was like, man, this stuff makes me who I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
but really early on too, like I started, you know, I would do things that, like I would just take off all my clothes at a party or do something totally random or like, you know, pee in someone's room or something, you know, just stupid things you do.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, maybe I'm just being a kid or being a rock and roll guy or whatever, you know, but, and then that progressed, and then after I graduated high school, I moved out, and I started experimenting with, even in high school, I started experimenting with some drugs and, you know, pot, and then it moved to experimental stuff with LSD and mushrooms, and then I started waiting tables after high school and got into opiates. Like I got into hydrocodone, and then I think Percocet was the first thing I had, and I was like, whoa, this is incredible, and then I got down that rabbit hole, and it was sort of like when I would drink too much and find myself getting in a lot of trouble, I would switch and I would stop drinking and I would just take pills because it wouldn't make me as like just do things totally off the wall crazy. But they were very expensive and they were very, very bad on my body as well. And then later found that the two of them combined was even better, you know, and then, eventually it was just like trying to find the cocktail of like the perfect high, you know,
mm-hmm.
between being able to sleep, being able to work and perform, and then being able to get rid of anxiety. And so, you know, everything from Adderall to pain pills to benzos to drinking, you know, it was kind of a mixture of everything. But booze, you know, I identify with being an alcoholic and an addict, but definitely an alcoholic was my main drug of choice.
Yeah,
you know?
I can understand that. I mean, you said when you drank the alcohol, it made you feel you could just be whoever and everybody liked you. And I can identify with that. The first time, you know, my 21st birthday, I was going out with some guys at work. You know, these are all white guys. And then we went to an all white bar. And, you know, I was kind of used to being around in that situation, but when I got drunk, I just didn't care. I was just on the floor dancing, and I thought I found this thing that made me feel like, you know, this hole was filled or whatever. Mm-hmm. So did you grow up thinking, did you grow up feeling different?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I've heard a lot of alcoholics say this too. You know, you just felt like there was something different about you. I had someone described it as like a sharpness. I kind of just felt a little bit on edge, you know. I liked people. I was kind of an extrovert. And also had some things. I mean, I don't blame this for being an alcoholic, but like I was jumped pretty bad when I was a kid and put in the hospital for these guys beating me up with a bat. And but I was just a little bit nervous around people, especially the older I got, if I didn't know you very well. And it just kind of allowed me to be fearless. I didn't worry about anything else. And for the most part, I thought I was fun to be around. I was happy to be around until I started blacking out, and then I would just make some really, really bad decisions, you know, mm-hmm. as we do. But my 20s too, I was just like, this is just part of the deal, you know. I moved to Nashville, and I signed a record deal with Warner Brothers in Los Angeles, and by that point, I was about to be married, and my wife at the time was the first one to tell me, it's like, I think you're an alcoholic. And I was like, what? That's crazy. Like, this is just what we do. You know, mm-hmm. I play rock and roll. I go play shows. I get a little wild, but you know, I can manage this. You know, that was always my thing. Is like, I knew when I started drinking, it was really hard to stop, but I always thought I could manage things. And like, the way I always did that was I would, take breaks. Like I would go on a long bender. It would be, you know, a few days, a week, a month, 2 months, mm-hmm. and then I would have a bad consequence, and then I would apologize, like, you know what, guys, let me just reset, and I'll fix this. And so I would take, you know, sometimes a few days. I think one time I took 3 months off, but every time I started back again, I was trying to drink normally, but I couldn't, you know. It was just like, I would sit there, and I would order a beer, and then I would just kind of start tapping my leg and just thinking about the next drink. And then, you know, had several consequences and went through a divorce. And then I had the freedom of, like, being single and depressed. And then it really escalated to a new level of drinking and using. Because I wasn't worried about, you know, trying to save a relationship or anything more. I was just like, screw it. I'm going to do this like I want to do it. And and that was, I guess, probably about the time I was 30 or so. And then the last 5 years was pretty epic amounts of consumption of alcohol and using. And there was, I'm not gonna lie, I had some good times, but I had a lot of really bad times. You know, I messed up a lot of relationships. I almost died. You know, that was what finally got it for me. As I kept doing the same thing, I would quit, and then I got in another long-term relationship with someone, and then we split up, and then I was just so depressed, and I was, you know, just, I somewhere along the way, I convinced myself that, one, I couldn't be me without drinking. Therefore, I didn't want to be sober, because I would be this person that I didn't want to be. So, but I knew that drinking was going to kill me, because I could tell I was getting physically dependent and things like that. And so, but the craziness of all that was like, okay, well, I think I would just prefer to let drinking kill me so I can be the real me, you know. And that's, this is the lie I was telling myself.
Yeah.
Until it became a reality. And then I was on tour. I was on this television show with an a cappella group from some friends of mine from high school and I put together. And we it was an NBC, like, network show. Wow. And we were... I was drunk as a skunk the entire time. It's really funny to watch those videos now. But people loved us. We were good. I was a high-functioning alcoholic. We almost won the show. We came in second place.
Yeah.
And then we were off to the races, touring. We were doing, you know, we performed Tony Romo's wedding, and we did, like, shows internationally. And we did shows in France and shows for FedEx and these big corporate gigs. And,
wow.
It was amazing, because then I was still getting an income, and I was able to feed the habit, and I was also just able to drink around the clock, and I was like, man, this is incredible. But I hit some low times, we dipped, and then there was a couple of years there where I, you know, didn't really have much of a place to stay. I always had a friend or somewhere I could crash, but, like, mm-hmm. I kind of outstayed my welcome in a lot of places. And then in 2015, I was on tour with the show that I was on. It was called the Sing Off Tour. And that last year of drinking, 2014 to 15, I was, I think, in the ER like 5 times. And panic attacks. And then I felt like these horrible internal pains. And I got some blood work done. And I was getting some signs of like developing cirrhosis of the liver. Mm-hmm. And I would wake up every morning like shaking. If I'd gone more than like 2 or 3 hours, I had pretty violent shakes and like jerking everywhere. And then I would like kind of clench up, and the first thing I would do is I would have to make a drink so I could start functioning, you know, so mm-hmm. my nerves would unleash and I could kind of relax a little bit. But the first drink always made me throw up at least once or twice. So like that was my whole routine. I would get up and kind of shake and get to my big ass gallon of vodka and pour it in some tea, and then get that down, throw it up usually, and then quickly, because I already threw up, if I could get another 2 down, I wouldn't throw up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started my day every day. And then I would try to maintain not getting too drunk so I could still get on stage and perform. And then at night, just drink copious amounts of alcohol and, you know, took Klonopins and other things to try to get some sleep and help me get a little bit of rest. And I don't think I even really ate that hardly at all the last year of drinking, but you know, definitely got a lot of calories from everything I was drinking. But so on that tour, a doctor was very honest with me, and he was like, "Hey, if you decide to keep doing this, then you're gonna die." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. Like, I figured this is like, no, like you're gonna die soon, and like from seeing your blood tests and everything else, or you could aspirate in your sleep, or you could just black out and walk into the middle of the street. There's a number of ways, but you are, and looking at your, I see pictures of myself, and I was bloated and had horrible skin, and he was very honest. He was like, you got about a year to live, man, I was just kind of floored, and I was really, really sad, and I kind of wanted to die in some ways, but I didn't. And then like seeing the reality of what that looked like, just how gross I felt, and how I was just like killing relationships, and I felt worthless, and I didn't want to feel that way anymore. So but I was also 100% dependent at that point. So I made a plan. It was a 3-month tour that if they just got me a gallon of vodka a day, I would get through the day. And then when I got home, I was going to sober myself up. And I did. It was like I almost died doing it. But like I'd hoarded up some Klonopins and some other things like to help with anxiety. And then on April 25th, we played a show in Nashville with another group I was with. And then came home and locked the door and closed myself in my little side bedroom, and spent 3 days thinking I was going to die, and came out on the other side. The whole time through detox, I was just, you know, in a fetal position and dry heaving and all kinds of other nasty things I'm not going to talk about happening.
Yeah.
But I watched this documentary series by, are you familiar with the documentarian Ken Burns? He's done all kinds of amazing things, but he has a documentary called The National Parks. And it's all about all the different national parks around the country. And so I'll watch that on repeat, and you know, I would see these, you know, amazing evergreen trees and these beautiful vistas. And I was just like this wreck, you know, shivering. And I was just like, all right, if I make it out of this alive, I'm gonna get outside. I'm going to really see this world. I'm going to appreciate nature. I'm going to appreciate existence. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And sure enough, you know, 3 days after thinking I was going to die, I realized that I was going to make it. I didn't normalize for a long time after that, but got through it, and didn't know anything about 12-step or therapy or anything. I just knew that I was going to die if I drank again. So I kind of had this little routine or this game plan I made up where, like, you know, I was once a week, I was going to go to my bar. I was going to just sit there with a soda water and not drink the entire time, just to prove I could do it. And I knew also I had to go back on tour and be around alcohol all the time, so I just wanted to prove to myself I would do it. So once a week I would go to a little bar up down the street, and I would do that, you know, just sit there. Everyone was getting hammered around me and I wouldn't drink. And then I would come home. I had an exercise bike in my room, and I was a smoker at the time too, but I would hop on the exercise bike and chain smoke and then watch Netflix. And but I was going crazy, you know, like I was scared to be out. I didn't know how to exist without drinking or using. And yeah. And then finally a friend talked me into going to a 12-step meeting, and it changed my life. Like I didn't like it that much at first. It was uncomfortable, but I would go every week with her, and then I heard some things that I really related to. And then I made the decision to get a sponsor, and then started working the steps. And a lot of the steps were hard for me from, I think, some of my upbringing. But, you know, 5 years later, it's one of the best decisions I ever made. You know, it's developed just this beautiful spiritual life that I get to have now. And, you know, I've been able to repair a lot of those broken relationships. I'm a marathon runner. My health is back. Oh, wow. I just finished my fastest marathon a week and a half ago outside of Memphis. I'm hitting all the national parks. I think I've seen 16 so far.
Yeah.
I'm going to see a couple more this year. And yeah, I've got a whole new life. It's yeah. Incredible.
So it is incredible. It's an incredible story. And I know you said a lot about the alcohol destroyed a lot of relationships. Did it really affect any relationships with agents or your producers? Were they concerned, or was they did, or were they like, well, as long as you can perform?
I think so. I mean, I've followed back with a few people, and I've made some amends there too. But I think everyone was rooting for me. Like, yeah. I wasn't a mean person. I tried not to be. I was very self-destructive. But I definitely there's one time in particular that I was staying at a studio with the producer in LA, and I woke up really drunk, and then had some more to drink, and knocked over a microphone in a studio. It was like a $10,000 microphone.
Oh.
Shattered it, and I was horrified. And so, like, I put it on a pillow, and then I was gonna wait till the morning time, and then text him and explain the situation. I made up this whole amazing story, but he was already in the studio there when I woke up, and I was like, oh my god. And he knew. Like, he just kind of looked at me and was like, all right, we're gonna have to figure this out. And then fortunately, the repairs were only a few $100 as opposed to several thousand. But but it's funny now that that producer is also sober now, and so we actually hit up some meetings together.
Cool.
That's been a fun ride. But and like I've had people that when I made amends, you know, they were just happy. They were just glad to see that I was finally taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And there are a few relationships that I couldn't really make amends to, and
for
I have
the
to accept
music
that.
Business or just in general.
Yeah, for music business. Yeah. And friends, you know.
Yeah.
But 99% of the people were there with welcome arms and just, you know, supporting me, which has been great. But there have been, you know, a couple people that just were like, screw you, man.
I think I have some people like that. Just probably they wouldn't care one way or the other. They'd be like, I don't care if you're doing good or not. I don't need you to apologize.
Yeah. And that's been the cool thing, like, about having sponsorship and mentors and people like, because a lot of people have that experience too, and he's like, you know, you've cleaned your side of the street. You really went with a sincere and honest and humble apology, and that's all you can do. So,
well, like I texted you and told you, I saw your song Hostage.
Yeah,
that was a good song. Thanks. Man, you working on anything now, or you work
tons of stuff? I was in the studio this morning. I work with a publishing company here in town now, so I write not only for myself, but I write for a lot of film and TV stuff. So this last month I had a promo for the television show Modern Family, which is on ABC.
Yeah.
And I've got a song this next month that'll be on the show Sirens.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked on a song this morning. I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say the name of the show.
Okay.
But like, hoping that gets placed. But it's been a really an amazing few years with that too. Like, when I sobered up, I kind of didn't want to do music anymore, because I think everything I associated it to, like, it was tough for me to be on the road. It was tough. I didn't feel like I wanted to be creative anymore. I just felt burnt out, and But the cool thing about that was I was able to start new from there too. And like, I, you know, I got a job. I was a fairly successful musician. And then when I sobered up, I got a job hauling around junk. I got a job with Tackle, and like my main position was I would go pick up your junk and take it to the dump. And I loved it. It was like one of the most
rewarding.
I was like, I'm working with my hands. Like, I feel like I get to be outside. I get to talk to people. And like, it's just, it was so different for me. I loved it. And like, it was freeing. And like, the cool thing is, like, it's sort of, that whole period made me reprioritize things. Like, how important my relationships were, and how important my physical health is, and how important my spiritual life is, and then also how important it is to help other people. It got me out of my own head for a while, and there was something, I felt like I was helping people doing that, and I don't know, it was just, that was the amazing thing about that is I can look back at those years, the year or two I did that in early sobriety, and I was so happy. So now I know if things don't work out financially, I can always haul junk and I'll be happy, as long as I keep myself sober.
I totally know what you're talking about. When I first came to Nashville, I was homeless and I wound up at the rescue mission. And in a while, you know, I was in the program and I was doing the, you know, work, helping them with the beds, get the beds out for the guys that were sleeping there at night, and working in the office. And one day I just thought, I said, man, I have a life, you know, I'm doing something, you know, instead of just trying to get high all day. So did you ever go to treatment, or you just?
No, I should have. I the detox was, it really could have killed me. Like, I was a really, really hot mess for a while, but I made it through it. So, I mean, if you're hearing this and you're thinking about doing things that way, the way I did it, don't. It is dangerous. Like, go to detox first and foremost. And also, I've got a number of friends and sponsees and people that have been to treatment, and it's highly beneficial early in recovery too, to, you know, if you have access to that, to do it. I think I just was really fortunate. And also, I was looking for things, you know. I knew I couldn't continue doing things the way I was doing it, so I was like, I need to find help. I need to find a different way of thinking, and 12 step really helped out a lot with that, and a lot of other things. You know, I got more into physical activities, like running. I really grabbed a hold of, and then really enjoy like yoga and meditation quite a bit, and then service work, you know, within 12 step, but also outside. You know, I like going down to Room of the Inn and serving food, or playing in the cafe there, and I like you know, just things like, I don't know when this is going to air, but the tornado just hit a few days ago, and helping out here in Nashville with some relief.
Yeah, you said you had a lot of friends that were affected.
Yeah, it's been a wild week. But yeah, it was, like we were saying this too, you know, it's great to be in this town. Nashville's got great recovery on a lot of levels, you know. Yeah, it's got a lot of great recovery for people that suffer from substance and alcohol abuse, and emotional. If you have issues with emotional sobriety too, it's great recovery in Nashville for that. And then people helping from storm recovery and like all these crazy natural disasters that are happening. Like, this is the volunteer state, and people want to help you here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yes. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I mean, it's awesome. Story. I'm sure that anybody who hears this, especially somebody who's going through the addiction part, and they hear that, they can see that there is hope and there's a way out if we want to surrender and just, you know, let, they say, plug the jug.
Put the plug in the jug.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you can think of that you said you're working on some stuff.
Working on some music.
You're engaged. You said you're engaged.
Yeah, I'm in a wonderful relationship with a gal, and she's active in 12 step and more on the emotional side of things. She's done things with things that are other than like chemical addictions and things like that. But But yeah, it's really nice to be in a relationship with someone too, like where you have that in common.
And, oh yeah.
And it's opened up the door for me to like be okay with healthy confrontation and being a little uncomfortable to, you know, because relationships are tough. Everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. But to be able to have that vulnerability and honesty with a partner, you know, is something that's really special too.
Yeah. Well, you said that you tested out. You went to the bars and made sure you could resist the urge. Do you have any temptations, really?
I don't anymore. No. Every blue moon, I'll see something and it'll spark something in my brain that remembers something enjoyable. Like, oh wow, that tasted good or that. Mm-hmm. But I feel pretty far removed from a drink. That could change tomorrow, you know. That's, you know, we all do this one day at a time. But like, I am fortunate to have had a low physical bottom. I was throwing up so much, and like, I was just so gross that I would want to vomit if I thought about drinking for like the first year. And then I drove past my watering hole, like a full year, and that spring passed, and I saw people drinking an ice cold beer, and I was like, whoa, that looks good. I was like, no, but it scared me. So I called my sponsor and went to a meeting and was like, hey, it happened. It was like a split second, but like a beer looked good to me. And then they just laughed. They're like, of course, you know, that's going to happen from time to time.
Yeah.
But I can always play the tape forward. I know myself. I have a very, I've done a very thorough first step on myself and know that I am, powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable.
Powerless is.
So if I were to do that, it's off to the race. You know, so like I know if I decide to do that, I don't know if I can curse on this podcast.
You already hit.
They call it. It's the fuck it. You know.
The fuck it.
Yeah. So I hope that I'm never in a place. To where I would say fuck it, you know, like I want to keep a relationship with my higher power. I want to practice everything I've learned and all this stuff, mm-hmm. you know, to be in the middle of the boat, so I don't get depressed. And like, that's another thing. Year two, I ended up realizing, you know, I'm prone to depression and anxiety, so I've got to watch that, and I've got to open up about it. And fortunately, I've been in a great spot for a long time now, but that comes with work. You know, I need to stick to my routines that I know are helpful in the morning. I need to reach out to other people and it's meetings and do the work.
Yeah, I was going back to you said about you passing your old watering hole. I was going to a meeting one day and the traffic was bad. You know how traffic is here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. So I went down, of all places, Broadway. Oh, it was torture. The whole time I'm looking at all these bottles spin around on the buildings and all. Mm-hmm. Do you ever perform down there? Or
Broadway? Yeah. Performed at the Ryman several times now. Actually, the second to last time I performed there, I was blackout drunk. That was in that last 3 months of drinking.
Yeah.
I performed there twice actually during that period, and I don't remember it, which was a shame because, you know, that's like the highlight of
his
career, you know, playing the Ryman Auditorium. But yeah, I don't remember it. But I've had the chance to play it again since I've been sober, which has been amazing.
Yeah.
This word gets used loosely a lot too, but I mean, I think it's kind of a miracle that the shift of perspective and who I was and who I am now. If 5 years ago from the day, if I could have the conversation with myself, from that person to who I am now, we would just be laughing at each other. We're like, what? Who are you? You know?
Yeah.
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 But it's incredible, you know?
Oh, it is. Yeah. How much you change, how much... I'm just saying you, but
yeah, totally.
Anybody mm-hmm. that, and I would have never thought I would have gotten back what I've gotten back in the amount of time. So what about, how can people look you up? How you have a website or?
Yeah, totally. Just Jeremy Lister and Spotify, iTunes, all the streaming stuff, Amazon, Hulu. I don't know Hulu was, but whatever else is out there. Yeah. And then some of the groups I still tour with, the acapella group I was telling you about, is called Street Corner Symphony. We tour a fair amount. We mainly will do like spotty stuff. We're doing actually something at Bicentennial Mall on March 20th. I'm gonna check my dates here in town, and then I'm sure we'll do several more shows, and then we always do a big Christmas holiday show too. But yeah, March 20th, it's open to the public at Bicentennial Mall, just downtown Nashville, which that we just found out that they will be open, you know, after all the tornado damages and things like that. We'll be a part of an event called America Sings, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, man, you know, I really appreciate you doing this. It's awesome to have people come on, and especially somebody like you with a story that is so inspirational.
Thanks, man.
It's really touched me. So, you know, you're welcome anytime.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I enjoyed the episode that I heard that you sent me quite a bit too. I'm looking forward to hearing more. I want to hear your full story as well too. Or do you go to the normal Saturday meeting we met at?
I go there sometimes. Okay. I'll probably go tomorrow. Nice. But I usually go down to, if you know where the 202.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. There's another good one tomorrow. I'll let you in on after this too. It's just a brand new one too. I just started going too. It's
really nice. Oh, yeah, over there?
It's in East Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Once again, it's Jeremy L. And thanks again, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks again to everybody for listening, and thanks again to Jeremy for coming on the show. And his story just embodies what this podcast is really about escaping addictions, and his story of how when we're in our addiction, we get so caught up in it, and it just becomes our total life, and it destroys everything around us, and it eventually destroys us. But there is a way out. And Jeremy's story is just a perfect example of that. So I want to thank everybody again, and tune in again next Monday for another episode of Escaping Addictions. Thank you.